Hey everyone, it's Glenn here from home, Depeche-Mode.com, and welcome to episode 12 of the Breathing in Fumes podcast. It's been a while, I've missed everyone, so I'm excited to do a new episode, and I have two very special guests joining me this episode, and I'm excited to welcome Daniel Casus from Spirits in the Forest to the podcast, and happy to have David McElroy from the Almost Predictable Almost blog and the forthcoming Halo book return to Breathing in Fumes. So we discuss many things, so let's get into it. This is Glenn, you're listening to Breathing in Fumes.
Hello.
Hi everyone.
Hey, this is my first time doing it with other people. Much needed. And I actually haven't done an episode of the podcast in over a year. I didn't realize that. I'd done some mixes. And actually, the mix I did for your Violator project kind of re-energized this. So, so let me introduce my last name challenged friends here.
Says the man called Hammerstrom.
That's right. Now we're here with David. Oh God, I'm already going to mess it up. McElroy.
Oh,
McElroy.
David McElroy. Hello.
God, mac and cheese.
And then Casus is my new favorite word. Daniel Casus. Now everybody knows David, you know, but Daniel, you're kind of a stranger to Depeche Mode fans. There was something about a movie.
I got lots of messages from people saying that they loved me and my band with my kids. That's true.
That's funny. Oh, that's good. Yes, it is Daniel from Spirits in the Forest. It's an honor for both of you joining the podcast. And sorry I haven't recorded one in a while. It just, I don't know, felt like 3 months and here we are a year later. So we're going to try and catch up a little bit here on some of the things going on in the world of Depeche Mode. And first, you know, we should note the passing of Florian from Kraftwerk, who passed away yesterday. Quick, put you on the spot. Favorite Kraftwerk album or song?
For me, the favorite song is Europe Endless, track one on Trans-Europe Express, because every time I hear it, that just blows my mind. But my favorite album is Radioactivity, because you think of the time they recorded that, it sounds like nothing else that came before it, and also nothing else that's come since it.
Definitely.
It's an extraordinary album. So as a whole, Radioactivity for me, but Europe Endless if I'm forced to pick one song.
Yeah.
And for me, it's kind of the same. Man Machine and Space Lab has been on my mind a lot lately, especially since I read the news. Space Lab was playing on my head all the time. So
that's amazing. Yeah. Both of those amazing. I home computer, it's more fun to compute. I just numbers, Tour de France. I dearly love Electric Cafe, and I know it's not, maybe it's not in the legendary status as perhaps Man Machine, but I just, that whole era, those 4 or 5 records right there, because they did so much before and after, and even some of the later stuff was amazing. But home computer is such an obvious answer, but that's got to be, it's, I don't know, I just love those. And we also lost Gabby from DAF too.
Yeah.
Which was kind of a bummer. But both of you guys got to see DAF on those last two Berlin shows. How was that?
I loved it. I thought it was great. They were they didn't really compromise what they normally do for a stadium show. They just came out and blasted away through just what you'd expect from DAF. It was extraordinary. I was with Sean Salo on the first night.
Who?
Some guy who he pretends he's a Depeche Mode fan. His favorite song's Policy of Truth.
That's right. Yes, yeah, that's right. With the pretty eyes. Sean with the eyes. Yeah,
that's
what
he's celebrating Policy of Truth's birthday all day today. You can find him online doing that. So he's a big DAF fan, so he loved it. And on the second night, I was with my friends from Scotland, and two of them hadn't heard DAF before. I think they found the experience quite interesting, but I thought it was fantastic. I'd never seen them before, so it was just superb to see them live.
Yeah, it was also my first and only time I saw them live, but actually on two shows. On both of them, I was with friends who'd never heard of them before. I think they found it they found it a little bit maybe boring, maybe too much. I don't know. They had some sound issues. I think on the second night they had some sound issues. Hubert Gore, he plays the drums like I do.
Awesome.
And after the show, they were sharing their beer crates with us. That was the best part.
That's very cool. So you were able to actually say hi, give them a quick hello kind of thing?
Yeah, I mean, it was more like, hey, we have lots of beer.
Hey, nothing wrong with that.
Sounds good.
You know, they were going to play here in the States, down in Los Angeles, which is about a 5-hour drive south for me. And then it was at like some festival, and I was going to go. Not a festival, but like a day thing. And then it got postponed, and then it never happened. And then now, so I'll never get to see them. So I'm eternally jealous that you guys got to see them.
Well, I didn't get to see Fat Gadget, so.
Yeah, me either. So
I did, just to be annoying. I saw them in 2001 supporting the Depeche and Exciter tour. Yeah, so.
Oh, man.
And it was Frank Tovey was just extraordinary. What a presence. He was just incredible.
Yeah, I can imagine. I was talking to someone who wasn't overly familiar with Kraftwerk, and I was trying to explain without, boring them to death about Kraftwerk's influence on so many things. That's music production. And, I was trying to tell the guy, Planet Rock by Afrika Bambaataa? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, the riff is Trans-Europe Express. That's Kraftwerk. And they were obsessed with European electronics, and I could just hear his eyes glazing over, and I was like, never mind, but people that are music nerds will always appreciate it. But oh man, that's kind of a bummer. And it's funny, I don't know if you recall the story Martin Gore was talking about in 1982. Kraftwerk came to see them. Do you guys know the story?
No.
So he was talking about it in some interview. I forget what it is, where it was from. So I'm sure one of those day in the life of Depeche Mode people will immediately know what date and time and what he was wearing. But he basically said that when they came to see them, and they were really huge fans of the band, obviously, and their equipment failed. It was nothing but problems. And if I remember the story right, I think he said he didn't even go backstage to meet him because he was so embarrassed at how the show went. And I can't remember if that's it exactly. It's somewhere in the middle. But yeah, Kraftwerk came to see them, and it was like a disaster. Like, and I guess Andy's nickname back in those days was Andy Kraftwerk. Because he was really obsessed with Kraftwerk, so people would his nickname for a time was Andy Kraftwerk. So, so we just wanted to make sure to note Florian's passing and influence on so many. It's just pointless to go into what they influenced. It's just crazy. Daniel Miller released a nice statement.
Yes, that was nice.
Did you guys see that on mute?
Yeah, I saw that.
Just read that.
And how he bought the vocoder.
That's so cool. Yeah.
Well, yeah, the actual vocoder.
Yeah, he described it years ago as like buying Jimi Hendrix's guitar that he played the anthem at Woodstock. And I was like, exactly.
Yeah.
Totally. That is exactly what he bought. But I thought it was sweet how he was saying that they kept trying to meet up for coffee or something, and they never ended up. And it was just a nice little tribute.
Yeah.
So, nice. Well, rest easy there, Florian and Gabby, of course. And I don't know who else 2020 is going to throw at us, but this year is. How are you guys holding up in the pandemic? I'm sure people listening might be trying to distract themselves from sitting in their houses. So, everybody holding up okay?
Yeah, we're doing fine here. I mean, Scotland's First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, she announced another 3 weeks of lockdown today, which for Scotland anyway, which I think is a sensible thing, whereas the moron in charge in Westminster, Mr. Johnson, and his collection of clowns that run the country, they appear to be trying to get everybody back out as soon as they can because
Sounds like my country.
Yeah, well, that's it's very much a mini version of the hell that you're currently going through over there, Glenn.
I wouldn't even go to Brazil.
Yeah, no. Yeah. Germany seems to have done pretty well with Daniel, the way they've handled it, at least from the outside anyway.
Yeah, we're slowly kind of reopening some stuff. I can finally have my haircut, but I cannot have my beard shaved. If I need someone else to do that. But yeah, things are slowly coming back to normal. But if they see that it's not going very well, they could go back. It's not.
Yeah, 100%. That's you know, they're trying to open up here really fast, and I'm like, oh, okay, well, we bent the curve, but let's reverse it so everyone wasted time for sitting in. But yeah, luckily I'm still working. I work from home full time, so I've been able to. Not much has changed. I was thinking it was going to get a little scary, but it is interesting to have the whole family home, and I'm working. But you know, that's okay. Yeah. Well, why don't I take this time? I'm really excited, and I'm sure everyone who's listening to this already knows. But both of you have officially joined the home team, admin team. Really exciting, and I'm also sorry.
Achievement unlocked.
Because we are kind of a bunch of idiots over here, but no, we have a good time, and it's really exciting that you guys have joined the home team. We all work on different projects. I do a lot of social media projects, and Daniel's doing a lot with the board. David, you're kind of a bust. I don't know what you're doing.
I have no idea what I'm doing. No, I was delighted Daniel came in because I was thinking, Christ, what am I meant to do as the new guy? Am I meant to be running things? But Daniel's now taking that role, so that's absolutely fine. I think I'm just here to provide wise advice in the background.
Oh, no, you're letting us in on your almost blog madness.
That's true. Yeah. I'm sharing the load of that nonsense. It's great to be involved, and I've enjoyed it. I just need to learn a bit more about how to run the board efficiently, because I've been a bit too busy with work, and then the Violator project took over my life. So
We're gonna get into that madness in a little bit.
I'm now ready to focus on home though, but in the meantime, Daniel's doing a heroic job running the board.
Yeah, when I'm not blocking myself.
Oh right. Good, yeah. I don't want to be too behind the curtain, but for people listening, like, we have people that are a little more visual than others and people that work on different things. Or if so, it's a lot of it's time zone, like I'll wake up to news and I'm like, oh, but you know, somebody in your guys' time zone will have already posted it, or things that break in my time zone, you know? So we have people like Sean's in the East Coast. You guys are in, I don't even know what to call it anymore. Is it Europe, UK? You guys are over there. And then Germany, that time work frame. And then the Peets, and they're in their world, and we all just, from admin to different roles. So it's kind of, it's a mismatch of who's doing what. But really excited to have you guys give us a kick in the butt, a little fresh air. So that's cool. Well, why don't we just jump ahead to David's Violator madness? Because 30 days of Violator. Are you still, can you even listen to the record anymore?
Unbelievably, I still can. I think I got to a point I actually went beyond Violator. I kind of transcended it and it became part of me or something. That's obviously rubbish. But I still can. It was...
I had a beautiful image in my mind. Ruined it. Go ahead. Keep going.
It was a challenging time. I mean, I started this kind of mad idea with Black Celebration in 2016 and spent all of March 16 writing about that album's 30th birthday and swore that I would never do it again. And then the Global Spirit Tour project came up, and that only took over 18 months of my life all in. So I vowed at that point, I'm never doing this again. And then I thought, I have to celebrate Violator. So I did it, and people very generously chipped in and wrote things. And as you did, Glenn, prepared an audio tribute to the album as well.
Yes, so it
was good. I didn't have any kind of key interviews this time like I did in Black Celebration with it when I had Gareth Jones, but I used the month to promote Halo, the book that Kevin May and I have got coming out about Violator, so we could drop in some exclusives there. So that was quite good.
Yeah. Eagerly waiting for that book, by the way.
Yeah,
not me. I'm not interested at all.
You're not getting a free copy, Glenn. Don't worry.
I want a signed copy. I'll even pay for it to support it. I
just, that's good.
You and Kevin have to sign. Call me an idiot in or something. Hey, moron, here's your book.
Don't do that. That's fine.
Well, yeah, we could do a whole episode discussing that. I'm totally fascinated how Kevin looped you in to working on that, and a couple things you posted on there. Like Francois Kevorkian mentioning Martin Gore was like seeing John Lennon. Like, that floored me.
Yeah, but, well, Kevin...
Oh, my God, I love that.
Kevin did an awful lot of work a few years ago in the book before kind of real life got in the way for him for a while. But, yeah, he went to New York and interviewed Francois Kevorkian. He interviewed Steve Leon, I'm not quite sure how he pronounced his name. And he interviewed a whole number of people to do with the book, and the Francois stuff is incredible. My kind of involvement really just because Kevin asked me if I'd like to help out, and I was delighted to do so. And
hey, look at this madman on a blog. Well, I need that energy.
Yeah, it is. He needs somebody really weird to help out. So I kind of came. My role was really kind of basically watching in very slow motion the credits to Strange 2. To find out who all the people in the videos were. And then we tracked down a number of the actors in the videos and interviewed them.
Jenna Elfman, right?
Yeah, Jenna Elfman.
Wow.
So we've picked up quite a few of them. And I realized when I was looking, and this makes me sound incredibly weird, but one day when I was reading Violator's Inner Sleeve, I saw the name Niels Tuxen. And I thought, who the hell's Niels Tuxen? So I Googled him, and it turns out he's a Danish steel guitar player in his 70s.
Oh.
And he was the first ever outside musician to appear on the Depeche Mode album. Because Alan decided that he wanted some steel guitar on Clean. And so Niels went into the studio, played for a couple of hours, Alan and Flood recorded him, and then that was it. And it was only when his daughter saw his name in the album sleeve a few years later that she pointed it out to him.
And that's so cool.
He's listened to Clean, and he cannot hear his contribution, but his contribution is there. It's just been recorded and then, you know, sampled and looped backwards and forwards. So yeah, we spoke to him as well. So
given the Alan treatment,
So we tried to get the band. The band don't speak about these things, which is fair enough. And we were trying for all the support acts on the tour as well. So we spoke to Billy Ray Martin of Electribe 101. Yeah. So we got a long interview with her,
who I love. People hated them, but
I thought they were great. Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Spoke to her. We were very close to the Pet Shop Boys. We almost had them, and Johnny Marr. But they both decided that because Depeche weren't involved, they wouldn't take part themselves. But we got a nice email from the Pet Shop Boys management, passing on their best wishes and so on. So that was cool.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Well, that I can't wait. Is there? Is it too early to wonder if there's going to be? Do we have a forecast on a release date on that? Or
it's been put back up. We had hoped May, but Kevin works on a travel industry blog, which is a very sort of successful thing.
Right.
And unfortunately, because the travel industry has gone bananas in the last 3 months, Kevin's every waking hour of Kevin's is spent working within the world of travel, which I don't quite understand myself. But he's busy there, so it's put us back a little bit. But we are catching up very soon. We hope to have it out. With a bit of luck, we can have it out towards the end of summer, but it certainly will be this year.
Oh, okay. Well, looking forward to that. And then Daniel was in a little... Casus.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that every day now.
You're bringing back all my school memories, because everyone in school called me Casus because it was a different name. It's not a common name. It's not a common Portuguese name. So, yeah, you're bringing back school memories now.
How many people say Cassius?
Lots of people. And even here in Germany, I actually have a middle name. And here in Germany, they want to call you by your entire surname. So I've been called...
Oh, really?
I've been called everything. I've been called even Touré Cassius.
Wow,
it's actually just Pires, which is the Portuguese version of Pérez in Spanish. But yeah, somehow someone managed to call me by Mr. Bourget.
Well, that's way worse. I get Hammerstrong or Hammerstorm. You got it way worse than I do. So, but what was I going to say? Oh, Daniel was in a little film called Spirits in the Forest. And spoiler alert, that's so dumb to say. You and I were going to be recording an episode where we're going to dig in a little bit and talk about your experiences there. But, you know, just out of curiosity, before we get into that on another episode, but were you a little apprehensive to do it? Because, I mean, obviously you want to do it because you love the band, but like your instant, like everyone's going to know who you are. Everyone's going to friend you. Everyone's going to send you messages. Everyone's going to say, can you get me Dave's autograph? Everyone's going to want to know everything. And so were you a little hesitant in advance of worrying about that kind of thing?
I knew that was going to come with my acceptance of the invitation.
Yeah.
Eventually. So I'm trying to figure out how to make money out of this. How do I become a personality now? I'm a celebrity, sub-celebrity from a reality film, something?
Go to some Depeche Mode conventions and then set up a booth and sign headshots. $20 yeah. headshot. No, yeah, see, that kind of thing would make me a little apprehensive, you know, like, oh man, I mean, Facebook's enough already, but like, this is crazy. Any weirdos trying to already ask you too many questions besides me? easy.
There are some people insisting on some questions about something which I cannot talk about. Yeah, yeah. And these people, they don't get a grip.
Yeah, I don't have Dave's phone number. Sorry. I'm sure they're trying to ask you all those kind of, like, I mean, I was, yeah, it's funny.
My real apprehension about the film was trying to make it look good. I wanted people to like it.
Yeah,
but that was beyond my powers. It was more up to the to Anton and to the co-directors, John and Pasquale. So yeah. everything was a surprise. But we'll talk more about that later.
Yeah, yeah. One thing that's really cool that I didn't catch until you told me about it was I didn't realize the bridge you were running under was the bridge in the Everything Counts video.
Exactly, yes.
Did anybody catch that?
Not really. In fact, I noticed very few details about all the other fans as well that make a reference to some other Depeche Mode video, and it's not that obvious. The one I'm running under is actually an elevated part of the subway, but it's, yes, it's the same from the Everything Counts video. Indra,
yeah, I wouldn't have caught that.
Indra, she's opening the doors of her stable, it looks a lot like Dave in Personal Jesus.
That's clever.
Yeah. Liz blasting
in the car
in LA at night. It's totally the video for But Not Tonight. Crystal is a little bit more obvious. I mean, John of Silence.
Oh, yeah, the photography. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And maybe I'm just seeing too much into this, but Dickon and the kids, when they're playing at the little fair near the end of the movie, reminded me a little of the Get the Balance Right video. I don't think they would...
I can barely remember the Get the Balance Right video. I can't even remember the last time I watched it. You know, I bought the last DVD collection they did, but I only watched the videos with their commentary.
I've seen the other videos
a million times. Yeah. What's going on the Get the Balance Right video?
There's a fairground ride. There's one where they're all kind of dressed as milkmen.
Oh,
And that's the one where the director thought Alan was Dave, so the camera's focused on Alan all the way.
And he was singing,
That's not their finest moment,
Oh, and honestly, the most obvious one would be Karine in her yellow Vespa.
Never Let Me Down?
No, from Behind the Wheel.
Behind the Wheel. That's right.
Yeah.
I was thinking Little Car, like little, you know, but yeah. Man, I haven't watched their video. I know this is going to sound blasphemous, but none of their videos of like, I mean, Enjoy the Silence, you can't put in this category. And I love the Anton videos, but in general, I think if I had to pick a favorite, it'd be Stripped, and it's not even an Anton video. In general, I don't, that goes for everybody. Like, mm-hmm. Videos weren't something where I was just blown away with or like would repeatedly watch. I would buy them to have them in my collection. Yeah. And I was never a big video watcher. I just thought that you running under the bridge was just the coolest connection. I didn't even catch the other ones. But yeah,
That was something that, I mean, we had seen that location the day before, and they were obviously concerned with the sunlight. It was already July, so it was getting dark very late. So they wanted to do it with the best light that fitted the photography of the movie. And it was very calculated. That was really nice.
Oh, that's cool. Was that your idea or their idea?
It was their idea to go there. It's because where I live, there's another one that's kind of like that bridge. It's just a little bit different.
Uh-huh.
But they wanted, but I don't know, for whatever reason, they chose the other one because we were also doing some street scenes around that area.
I'm curious about the stuff that didn't get shown, because I'm sure they filmed so much more than what was in the actual documentary film, whatever we want to call it. So I'm curious if that stuff will ever see the light of day as extras or anything on the DVD CD package or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know what's funny is I never really thought about, in particular, Depeche Mode locations until Michael Rose from the UK. I'm sure you're both familiar with him.
Yeah.
He did a trip here to the States, and he went to areas where things from the, not just the Rose Bowl, but he went to the, you know, the studio where they record in Santa Barbara, the beach where they shot the photos at for Exciter. He went to the It's No Good bar in Los Angeles from the It's No Good screens. He went, and this one blew me away. He went to the Mission where they shot the photos for Some Great Roar, Songs of Faith and Devotion.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that Mission, San Luis Rey, is literally 5 minutes from my work, right around the corner. Yeah.
Yep.
When he posted, it's like Oceanside, California. And I live in Northern California, but the company I work for is down in Southern California. And I go down every 6 weeks, and I'll stay down there for a week to hang, and then I come back. And I still yet to go over to it. So when Daniel mentioned that bridge, it just brought back that. And then I'm like, why have I not gone over there when I'm in Oceanside? It's literally 5 minutes from, I just thought that was shot at some old church in Spain or something, you know, and here it is in San Diego, basically.
Wow. I didn't know that at all. Right. Cool.
Yeah.
I also had thought it was also something in Spain, but yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember him finding out that location. Yeah.
Yeah. Now you can, there's Facebook pages dedicated, and they find out where the Useless video was shot and all this. It's like, it's pretty amazing. They post, I forget what it's called. It's probably like just Depeche Mode Location Services or one of those things, but
something like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Did the hand statue from Everything Counts, did that come up and you guys didn't film there, but was that mentioned?
No, and it has not been located on that page, but I know where it is. But it also took me, like, I've been living here for almost 7 years now, and I only found out where it is, like, last year, maybe? And it's behind a subway station that I just don't use it very often. And when I use it, I use another exit. So it was just behind me all this time.
Oh, wow. That's like me finding about the mission. Like, what?
Yeah.
It's like, wow.
It was just across the street if I took the other exit.
Wow.
What subway station is that in, Daniel?
It's Turmstrasse.
Okay.
Cool. How far is that from where you're at, David? Like, how far is Germany from, like, from Glasgow?
It's about 2.5 hours by plane, Glasgow to Berlin.
Oh.
Me and my wife go over maybe about once a year or once every 18 months to Berlin just because we love it. And I've never thought of hunting down the Depeche Mode locations, but much to her inevitable disappointment, when we're able to travel again, I'm going to do that.
I always joke that one day I'll get over to the UK because I really want to obviously go to the Salford's Lads Club or whatever in Manchester, because the Smiths, you know, because I love the Smiths equally. And then I was like, it'd be fun to go to Basildon, you know, just for an afternoon, just walk. I mean, sounds kind of obsessed, and it's probably just like, oh, there's the Tesco and a patch of grass. Like, why am I standing here? But, you know, you hear about the early days, like St. Nicholas School and all these things, and it'd be like, it'd be kind of fun just to, I don't know, but then it kind of seems a little obsessive. So
I think there must be a guided tour. I'm sure there's a guided tour for that.
Yeah, Deb does it. Danahay. Is I saying her last name right?
Danahay, probably. Danahay. Yeah, anyway, same thing. Yeah.
I don't know if she still does it. There was a time, and for those of you who don't know, aren't familiar with her, she was dating Vince Clark at the time of Speak and Spell. Her and Joe Gahn ran the Depeche Mode fan club in the early days.
Yeah.
And she's really cool about sharing like different things from her journals and on her Facebook. And there was a time she was doing Basildon tours. I don't know if she still does it.
Not sure. Yeah. I'm sure if you were across, she'd be able to help you out. I've got no doubt she'd help you out.
Just recently, she did a couple live videos that were really cool.
Yeah,
I feel like I'm crossing a personal line here, but like on her personal Facebook page, she was just like, hey, you know, she was just holding up her phone. This is where, whatever, St. Nicholas School or whatever. Mm-hmm. This is where Andy Fletcher went to school, and it wasn't anything weird. It was just a shot of the building. I wouldn't mind cruising around there. You know, it'd be just I think I've commented before to both of you how I'm fascinated with that early days, like Crocs, and just that first, that just, you know, what bands did they go see, you know, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
just
yeah.
For whatever reason fascinates me.
Playing on beer crates.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might be a project we're going to be working on at some point. One day I'll go over there, you know. It blows my mind when I hear you say, oh, I can get on a plane and fly 2 hours to Germany. I think it's like from California, it's probably like a 17-hour flight or something.
Yeah.
You know, from me to fly to New York is a 5-hour flight. That's how.
Wow. Right.
You know,
okay.
So it's the scope of things, you know. So just driving from one end of California to the other, I think, is 12 hours. So it's.
You know, I have an idea. I took some of those flights, and I actually did that road trip from Seattle to LA.
Oh, you did that?
Yeah.
That's a long drive.
Yeah.
Because it's like from where I live to Seattle is like 12, 13 hours. So
yeah.
You must have broken it up. Did you break it up in a few days?
Yeah. I had a stop in, it was not Portland, it was actually
Vancouver?
No, it was, I think, on the border between Oregon and California.
Okay. Yeah, Southern Oregon, and there's a... next time you come, we'll have to go get dinner and make fun of David and the rest of the guys. No, I'm just kidding.
That sounds fine to me. Don't worry about that. That's cool.
I don't know. We'll FaceTime you. We'll FaceTime you.
That's good.
Yeah. But talking about just one issue, yes. going back to Florian Schneider, yes. Now that he passed away, I was going through my pictures and I found that a couple of years ago, I found out where the original Kling Klang Studios are or were in Düsseldorf.
Wow.
Everybody that follows them a lot knows that it's just a building without anything special written on it. There's no marking. There's nothing special about it.
Yeah, it's like looking at a brick wall. Yeah.
Exactly. And that's what I found, according to a few different sources. But these same sources also said that they actually moved their studio in 2009 to a bigger facility, a little bit outside of the center of Düsseldorf. So I just saw the old building from the outside, but it was cool.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
I've joked with my wife. I said, you know, we're going to go take a trip over because I've yet to visit. I've been to Canada. I've been to Mexico, but I haven't been over to Europe or the UK or anything yet. And we're going to plan a trip when our kids get a little older. But I said, I don't want to go till I have a guilt-free stack of money that I can just, you guys can go look to a museum or something. And I can just go on a record store binge. And because I just know there's things in the dollar bins and things that like, singles that just never made it over here or anything, and I just want to go with a guilt-free, carefree amount of money and just probably have to ship the box home.
I was going to say, how are you going to get all those hundreds of records home when you get back in the plane?
I just want to go to Germany, and I just know that the record stores are insane. I know that Depeche bootlegs are probably insane. Oh, dude, do we want to talk about that BT record? Oh my god.
Yeah, that was that's a strange one. Basically, Paul Field, who's one of the two guys that runs the We Buy Records podcast, which I can strongly recommend to everybody.
Yes, I agree.
Paul's got I probably better not say too much, I guess, but Paul has a contact somewhere in continental Europe who has a little record pressing thing in his shed in his garden. And he is able to, well, basically press up whatever you want, but Paul is a huge Depeche Mode collector anyway, but so it annoyed him that the BT remixes of It's No Good had never appeared on vinyl, because vinyl's Paul's thing. So he spoke to this guy, and he happily agreed to press up a 12-inch of the BT remixes of It's No Good, and only four copies were made, and I was one of the lucky people that managed to get one.
I saw that on Twitter. And my jaw hit the ground. I was like, what?
Yeah,
I knew it was a bootleg, but I was just like, I collect bootleg white labels, 12 inches. Like and I just, you know, those are usually made in like, you know, 300, 500, 1,000, and then they're gone. And so, you know, like I have the Frankie Knuckles white label of Wrong that was pressed to vinyl. And then, you know, a lot of the digital only mixes will get pressed to a white label. And I would snatch them up, like the Troy Pierce Everything Counts, and there's all these ones, so I have them on vinyl, just because I love white labels, not for any other nerdy reason than I just like, you know, like Ricardo Villalobos' Sinner and Me got pressed to a white
label.
So I grabbed that, and that thing went crazy. Mm-hmm. The Depeche fans hated it, but that was a huge remix.
Yeah.
And so, like, when I saw that, I was just like floored. I was like,
God. It was really cool. And the work they put in the, you know, being Depeche Mode, well, being a hardcore Depeche fan like Paul is, he wanted to make sure that the label looked good as well. So the label, I'm just looking at a picture of it just now, and I can share a picture when the podcast goes live. But the label's got the Fleur de Lis emblem from the It's No Good single on it. And it also, instead of saying mute, it says unmute.
That's so good.
It's also produced by It's Too Good Records, which is a bit of a nod to Anton's line in the video. And then finally it says Made in Secret, which is quite cool. So it's a nice thing to have.
And for people not familiar, BT is an electronic I mean, he makes all kinds of electronic music. And he's very legendary. He had a big song with Tori Amos and Blue Skies, something Skies, I can't remember. That's escaping me. Mm-hmm. And he's a big Depeche fan, too. And he did a remix of It's No Good back in 1997. And it didn't get released. But it ended up on a Paul Oakenfold mix. And the fans were bootlegging, making dubs of the Paul Oakenfold mix and then cutting it out. Mm-hmm. And so the only way you could get it for years was this just literally, you know, cut out of a DJ mix. Mm-hmm. And you know what's so funny? This is how pathetic I am. I've been to one Depeche Mode convention. It was one of the Los Angeles ones. It was 1998. And they had, it was before all it, now it's just cover bands, but the Brat was DJing, which was really cool. He's a really good DJ. And they had these booths out front, and I spent so much money. But I bought these two, it's a two CD set of unreleased stuff. And one of the tracks on it was the BT remix of It's No Good, but that was the only way to get it.
Right,
on a CD. And I don't think it was, I mean, this was 1998, so I don't know if it was MP3 sourced, but I still have that CD. But it was like, I don't know if this translated in your guys' side of the world, but it was like trying to get the 12 at the time. Now you can get it easy, but the Club 69 12 inch for It's No Good, the promo, the American promo. Mm-hmm. And Daniel and I remember connecting with you about Club 69 and Peter's remixes because you're a big fan of his work on the message board years ago. But they had one and I had to buy it. I paid $50 for it. But at the time, this is pre-internet, really eBay buying Discogs, you know. But that was the only way I could get it, you know. So I paid, and then I bought those two CDs were $50 each. Now they're worthless, but at the time that's what you had to do to get it. But I saw that 12 inch and I immediately thought of those CDs and was just like, oh man, like there's a 12 inch for it and then there's four copies. I was like, man, that sucks.
You do know that there's a version of Peter's remix of Suffer Well on a mixed CD from him.
Yeah.
It's called, I think, I Love Miami Volume 2, maybe, because it's a double CD. And it's slightly different to the official one that came out on a promo. So.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. So
those are the last remixes he did for Depeche Mode before he passed. Suffer Well?
Suffer Well. No, he still did Wrong. He did Peace, even though I think Peace was not officially commissioned. I think those were the last ones, yeah.
Oh, I don't know if I've heard his Wrong remixes. I don't know. I don't remember. There's some remixes I forget and some that I choose to forget, but...
I managed to start a conversation with him because of the Depeche Mode.
Oh, cool.
And it's Legend. Not easy. It's not easy to get him to talk to you. He's very...
Right.
Yeah, he's very concentrated on mixing. He doesn't want anyone on the stage or in the DJ booth next to him.
Oh, yeah. For people not listening, Peter, I always match his last...
Yeah,
Rohrhofer?
Yeah.
Peter Rohrhofer was also Club 69, Size Queen. He did a lot of amazing stuff for Tribal Records, if I remember right. And he was just a dance music legend who's sadly passed away. He did a remix for It's No Good that's easily accessible now. But, you know, it's funny. When I was at the convention, the guy who was selling it was telling me that the band were so upset that they commissioned this remix and they hated it so much that they tried to recall all those 12 inches and have them destroyed. So
really?
I don't know how true that is, you know, but that's what they were telling me. He was probably just trying to get my $50, you know, for the record. But I was like, no way, give it to me now, you know, and I still have the $50 price tag on it. And later I found out the guys who sold the stuff and who made them. And I was like, oh, you guys got $150 out of me, jerks.
Wasn't the Club 69 remixes of It's No Good, they were on a limited promo 12-inch.
Right.
At the time.
A reprise promo 12-inch.
Yeah, and there's a few over here as well. Yeah.
Pre-Discogs YouTube thing, it was kind of more of a collector's thing. It's not like the white or gray, just can't get enough, but at the time, like, just having it, like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm, cool.
But, but that was the only way I could get it. And then just all those things, sometimes those memories will pop into my head when I'm looking at the, when I saw that photo you posted of that, the BT remixes on, mm-hmm. on vinyl, I was just like, oh,
sorry.
I want to know more about this Paul guy, because it's been a couple of years already that I've been seeing like a flood of new vinyl bootlegs here in Berlin and Germany as a whole. All of them made from material that's already available on the internet right now, like previous concerts that were transmitted, that were streamed and everything. But
I bought a few here in this that somehow made it here to the States of bootlegs, and they'll be, or some of them I've ordered on Juno out of the UK. Mm-hmm. But they'll be like, you know, it'll be a webcast. So I know it's MP3 source, but I just collect that stuff 'cause I'm a nerd. But it'll be like the webcast concerts, and they can fit like four songs on each side. And I buy them up from various different things, but I've been seeing more things like that Highline 10-inch. And it's like, I want to get one of those, but I never saw one here, and online they're expensive, but the shipping is like, it's just insane. So it'd be like $100, and I'm just like, I'll find it eventually. Mm-hmm. not paying $50 to have a 10-inch shipped, but, yeah, it seems like stuff's squeezing out. Someone in Berlin, or I don't want to point fingers, but
no, I also don't think it could be in Berlin. It could be, I don't know, Estonia.
Russia. Everything comes from Russia.
my initial guess is Russia.
Yeah.
Well, I heard that you'll have seen a lot recently of Violator represses in red vinyl or white vinyl, and there's an ultra now. That apparently they're Chinese made color vinyl bootlegs that have found their way over here.
Interesting.
Well, it's over here, over to Europe, and obviously they're worthless. It's just, but you know, they look nice, I guess. The worst ones for me are the guys on eBay who sell those rip-off things from Italy. There's a guy, for example, who regularly sells what he claims is a very limited edition 3-inch CD single box of Enjoy the Silence that came out with an Enjoy the Silence necklace that was that was free with it. I'm just going to actually look him up on eBay now and name and shame the guy. I mentioned him when I was...
Well, let's not promote him.
No, that's true. I won't do that. Sorry. Yeah, anyway, don't spend €1,600 on an Enjoy the Silence CD single. If you're shopping for expensive Depeche Mode things, check on reputable sources first.
Yeah. Because the original 3-inch discs for Enjoy the Silence, they just did the blue and the yellow, the limited and the regular, right?
Yeah, that's right.
That's it.
The XL CD as well was in 3-inch, the quad final mix. But
oh, they did the XL. Okay.
But this guy sells all manner of expensive bullshit online, and he's to be ignored. Check if you're buying a Depeche Mode record that seems expensive. Check on Home, check on Depeche, or just ask around. Don't get ripped off.
That's like, did you see that? Oh God, I'm such a nerd. Oh, but did you see? I'm sure you've watched this several times, like I have. When they're doing the warehouse in store in 1990 in LA, and someone presents Dave with a record to sign, and it's a bootleg, and he goes, I'm not signing that.
Yeah.
And the guy goes, why aren't you signing that? He's like, it's a bootleg. He could care less. He was being interviewed. He could care less that he bummed the person. He's just like, get that out of here. So I, whenever I think about that, I'm like, I don't want to promote, but I of course buy a lot of bootlegs. The thing that fascinates me as much is, like, you know, I mean, it's crazy to think MP3 source things are being pressed to vinyl, or like web rips off YouTube. But I got to admit, I have a couple that I have my eye on, but someone is reprinting tour t-shirts. Have you seen these on YouTube?
Yeah.
It's like Black Celebration, Music for the you know, any tour with the dates. They look just like the originals, and I'm just like, I know it's a bootleg, but I really want that Dodger Stadium World in My Eyes t-shirt.
Yeah, I've got to admit that I bought one of them 2 weeks ago.
I bought a couple. World in My Eyes one?
Yeah.
I bought one that says Mode 1988 USA.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
But I bought it from Wish, so it was like $6. Okay. It just took a little forever to arrive, but it did.
Yeah, no, there's some cool stuff on there, and you know, obviously the band's not getting any money out of it, but there's some, but they would never reissue them, and you know, and we're a buying audience.
I think we've all given the band enough money. They won't be just the odd bootleg T-shirt or two, you know.
It's like, put out the Dodger Stadium thing. Come on.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll call off the bootlegs after that if you send this put out the real thing.
I have always said, just put it out as the official bootleg. Like, we don't care that it's not mastered. We don't care that it's like the fans would. But I appreciate them wanting to put out quality. I get it.
Yeah,
but just make it the official bootleg. Like, remember the Free Love DVD single?
Yes, that's right. Yeah,
and they did the bootleg of Never Let Me Down. Like, just make, just do that with the Dodger Stadium thing.
Oh, that'd be good.
Or at least put it online or something. You know, maybe there's post band that'll be something that surfaces. But I'm sure today, with the technology we have, they can warm up the sound and do a few things to make it. Yeah, there's an audience there. I don't know how we veered into bootlegs, but but I'm still buying. I just bought a Delta Machine Tour bootleg on this crazy the vinyl was like they called it root beer vinyl. It was like a brown it looked like root beer. And it's like root beer vinyl, and I was like, I'll buy that, $30. But yeah. So
I bought one from Lisbon. I actually bought it for a friend of mine. But since it was a concert I had been to, Lisbon 2017, I ended up, I gave it a listen of the one I bought for him. And there's obviously some playlist error, because Going Backwards is missing and In Your Room plays twice.
Oh, well, I was like, hey, it's normal for him to cut a song out because of time, but that's bad.
And I also bought one again for him, but this time I also bought one for me because I liked it. It includes the Highline sessions and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But there's one live track in there, which is Dave's cover of Love Will Tear Us Apart. And again,
I have a soundboard of that, but I can't tell if it's an actual soundboard or if someone beefed up the audio to make, because sometimes, like, I'll play it next to another soundboard recording, and it's like, you know, because there's that, and then there's the Martin Gore Sweetest Perfection, like, one song from a soundboard leak came out, you know. It's like, how did just one song get out, you know, like, in that quality? Where's the rest of the show? Like, that kills me. There's no Counterfeit 2 tour. I mean, he released the songs in a live, he did a live DVD on one of the CD singles. Nice. But like, all the Depeche songs, Coming Back to You, none of those are, there's no soundboard. And if there is, come on, share it.
we deserve that.
Yeah. But because I was, you know, what's funny is I did a live stream mix thing a couple weeks ago, and it was funny because a couple people were like, you know, you should be playing some vinyl. I technically sort of was. I mean, I was using a DJ platform that puts digital tracks on vinyl. So what it does, that seemed to confuse people. It's basically a DJ platform that you load the song into the computer, and it shoots it to that turntable, and so it played the playback, everything's like vinyl. But then I was like, you know, I have all these live bootlegs and things, I think I'm just gonna, like, when I play live tracks, to do things like incorporate those more. So now I'm kind of, if I do more of those live, I'm doing another one, but if I do more of those, I might try and start finding those things just for visual playback or whatever.
Yeah, cool.
Depending on how long this lockdown goes.
I know. When's the next one? Is that May the 16th? Is that right? Your next one?
I think so, yeah. I forget the date. It's not this Sunday, it's next Sunday.
Right, cool, yeah.
So I might try and find some of those. But if you guys see an extra Highline 10-inch floating around.
I will keep my eyes out, don't you worry.
Because those very rarely make it here. So.
There were two versions of that 10-inch, you know. The first one had on the B-side the Stockholm performance of Heroes on the B-side.
Uh-huh.
But I think the quality was so low that on the second pressing, they replaced it for some other show, which I cannot remember right now. But on the A side was still the ripped from the Highline sessions, probably the YouTube audio.
Yeah.
The bootleg that I bought that has the Love Will Tear Us Apart thing, also, again, it's the only live track. It's the last track, unfaded.
Oh.
So you can tell someone just put, you know, the track on the playlist and let's just cut this vinyl now.
Wow, that's it's just like
yeah.
You know what? You know what's funny? And I need a new word here. But you know what's interesting is I've been playing in. I put it in the Violator tribute mix for David's project, and then I put it in. When I did that live stream, there's this remix of it I just got of Waiting for the Night that has, you know, what's funny is that is brand new. The guy who produced it's part of a famous deep house duo called the Synth Tigers. And he does re-edits of songs, and he did one for Never Let Me Down, and he basically just cut it up. But on that one, he wanted to make it sound specifically like it was released in 1990. So when he sat down, he's like, these were the popular drum patterns at the time, you know, kind of that funky drummer kind of thing. And that's why that mix sounds like it literally, like people are like, is that from 1990? Or is that an old? I'm like, it's literally, he just did it the last few months.
It's great. I was so surprised when I heard that, when I got my advanced preview of your mix. It was incredible. I just kept kind of winding back.
Yeah,
that's the right word these days in technology wise. But yeah, it's an astounding remix, and it does just sound like it was one that would have been recorded in the Violator era and then just rejected or something.
Yeah, no, it's brand, and I could just see someone getting that file and pressing it, and I would buy it.
Yeah, definitely.
But that's a brand new mix. His name's Alan. It's Synth Tigers. I forget what he does it on SoundCloud. I think it's just AC, but after we post this episode, I'll post it so people can check it out. But yeah, he sent it to me, and I was like, oh my god, this is amazing. And then when I saw that he specifically meant, so I'd love to see some more of those, because I remember, like, show up on vinyl, but I remember up and through Playing the Angel, maybe even Sounds of the Universe, that unreleased digital mixes or digital and unreleased mixes were getting pressed to vinyl, but I haven't seen that much in the last few years, even though vinyl's having this resurgence, but it doesn't seem like the 12 inches much.
No.
And you forgot to mention, we got the Violator box set coming here that I know everyone's super excited about. What's that? I know there's a release date. I should have this memorized.
I'm just checking. I've got the email from Mute says that the Violator 12-inch box set will now be released on the 17th of July.
Oh, okay. Well, let's hope, you know, with record stores being closed, perhaps that's a tentative date that might get changed.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of people, I mean, the whole time they were doing the unboxing videos, and everyone's like, when's the Violator one coming? Mm-hmm. So I know people are getting excited about that one. And then the Spirits in the Forest, what's the release date on that? That's coming. That's probably, they set a date for it.
The same email says 26th of June at the moment anyway.
But
yeah, that's really
also
close.
Tentative, yeah.
Yeah, I would, hopefully we'll see if that gets pushed back. And I guess the other thing we, you know, I'm looking at the time, we're hitting an hour here. We're probably, I wonder if anyone would still be following along with us. You're probably asleep by now. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame postponed, but that would have just happened, I think, this week.
That's right. Yeah.
I know Vince Clark released a statement really early on saying he wouldn't attend or feel right because of his contribution to Depeche was just one record. So he, I mean, it would have been nice. I'm sure they would have invited him to attend, but, and I don't know. I'm just curious, who would have inducted him and,
I thought it was a shame that not only did Trent Reznor do The Cure last time round, but obviously Nine Inch Nails are being inducted this time as well. So, because Trent Reznor would have been good.
That's what I was saying. Well, Trent's already done. The Cure got in last year. Maybe Robert Smith, but it'd probably be someone like Brandon Flowers from The Killers,
I know. Yeah, you think who would be good? You know, you'd really hope it wouldn't be somebody like Chris Martin or something turning up, which would just ruin it for everybody. Oh.
I know
this
is a stretch, but I think it'd be really cool if Billy Gibbons from ZZ Top would, because he's got a close relationship with the band.
Yeah, he's a huge fan, isn't he? Yeah,
he's a huge fan. He's seen the band several times. He's backstage with them. There's stories of him saying that they influenced ZZ Top to incorporate synthesizers. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember the quote, but I know when Dave Gahan reached out to him, he wanted some of that, he called it something mud, you know, when he requested him to remix Soothe My Soul.
Yeah.
And it's such a strange pairing, but, in that rock, that old school rock mentality, I wonder if he would be someone that they would immediately he would be relevant to the old school rock people and legitimize Depeche Mode to them. So I wouldn't be shocked to see him, but it would be kind of cool. Robert Smith, Bernard Sumner, but I think somebody like that, or it might be just an industry guy like Daniel Miller or Seymour. Seymour, they're all getting old now, but
maybe Neil Tennant.
Yeah, I would love that. That I had never thought about that, but yeah, absolutely. And then what would they play? You know, probably an abridged version of their early. Remember before the full Global Spirit tour, they were playing those short set.
Yeah,
thing,
yeah.
The warm up shows.
Mm-hmm.
And Daniel, you were at the Berlin one, right? The
the very first one of the Global Tour.
I remember seeing you so maybe it'd be in, you know, because I think they would play five songs, and I mean obviously people are wondering if Alan's gonna be on stage. I would think he would be there, and but I don't think he would perform, not out of spite, just he's not in the band anymore.
I don't think Alan would be there. I think it would just be the five we're kind of used to just now, the three band members plus Christine and Peter, I guess.
Yeah.
I think as well, set-wise, not being known for a band who are necessarily adventurous with their set list, shall we say. You certainly, if there's five songs, you've got Enjoy the Silence and Personal Jesus straight away. Probably Walking in My Shoes as well.
Yeah.
Just can't get enough, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah, or something like...
Policy of Truth.
Yeah. Or something like I Feel You, something with the Rocky, you know, because it is that whole mentality is changing too, because there's not the rock bands anymore like there used to be. Mm-hmm, so,
exactly.
So, you know, you're getting hip hop, Madonna, things like that going in. And would they pull a deep track out for a fan favorite?
You make a surprise medley of Lie to Me, Rush, Blasphemous Rumors, and What's Your Name?
I might swallow a bullet for not going if they did that. I might just go ahead and kill myself, because that would just die.
Ending up with an extended version of The Sun and the Rainfall, and that'll be that.
Oh. I didn't even try for a ticket. Literally the day those tickets went on sale, I think 30 concerts I wanted to go to all went on sale. And it's funny, because I complained on Facebook, like, why is everything going on sale? And then... now everything's canceled.
Of course.
But yeah, it's a bummer it got postponed. But I think November it's happening. Hopefully, okay. we won't have a resurgence of the spread of the pandemic, or maybe they'll have a better grip on some kind of vaccine. But or something, I don't know. But it maybe might have to get postponed to 2021 or something, just for safety, or not have an audience. You know.
Yeah.
So. I'm just curious what they'd play, you know, just, I don't know. Does anyone get inducted and they not play?
Well, I suppose this year, the people that are being inducted, aren't half of them dead or something? So
I hope there's no like 3D, you know, hologram of Whitney Houston.
Tupac hologram. No, I would just think there would be like all the people that Biggie inspired, so, or Whitney inspired. Mm-hmm. So since they can't perform, you know, maybe Alicia Keys will perform, and or you know, some current hip hop artist will perform Biggie songs or something. I just hope they don't have a cover band.
No, that'd be... you told that Depeche would get a good, you know, a good four or five songs even, perhaps.
Yeah, they're gonna have at least a slot for five songs, I think.
Mm-hmm. I would think if the Cure, whatever the Cure did last year, that's what Depeche and Nine Inch Nails will probably get.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So just so that they would come, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah. But it would be nice to see Vince and Alan up on stage with them. Mm-hmm. But I think it's gracious of Vince to do it. But it would be cool to see them just on stage accepting. You know, just not even just his one record, but his Mute Relations. And though I think his relationship with the band, or certain members of the band over the years, not Andy, but I think he and Dave, I don't know how well he's, mm-hmm. you know, it's funny in doing the podcast and obsessively going over interviews, I've seen him say positive and negative things about Vince. Mm-hmm. So they're not at that place anymore, obviously, but years past, but I would love to see all of them just kind of, but it should be about the current lineup, you know, even if it's just Dave, Andy, and Martin standing up there. But
yeah,
Alan will show up and he will play somebody. That one, he'll
yeah, that could see that. But would they want that played, you know? Just,
yeah,
but who knows? It's just it's crazy, but we'll have to wait and see. I didn't buy tickets. I didn't think I could get them, and everyone that day posted they all got tickets, and then it was sold out. I was just like, I'm not even gonna try, because I figured a majority of it was going to industry, mm-hmm. and the rest of it was. And then, like, all these people are like, I got tickets. I'm like, oh. So, and I don't know. So maybe they'll change it and open up some tickets and I'll try again, but Cleveland's far.
Yeah.
That's a 5-hour flight. You guys didn't buy tickets, right?
I looked at it, first of all, just in a moment of weakness, and discovered how almost impossible it was for me to get from Glasgow to Cleveland in anything under 3 days. So I thought, I'll give that one a miss.
I also didn't buy, but I have three friends that did buy.
Yes.
Two of them happen to be co-stars. It would have been a mini reunion for them.
I thought you were talking about the band. I'm kidding.
But I'm not one of them, and yeah, another friend also bought, and now they're all waiting for November, I guess.
Yeah, I would like, it's one of those things I'd love to go, but for whatever reason I didn't think I could get a ticket, or maybe I just didn't want to pull the trigger on the amount, you know. So, I don't know. Well, I guess we should start wrapping this up. We've already gone over an hour.
Yeah.
And, you know, we can do this anytime. Home chat on Breathing and Fumes.
Cool. No, that sounds good.
Yep.
Yeah. So, anytime you guys have things you want to discuss, I need to get back into doing these regularly. And Daniel and I will be doing a Spirits in the Forest, his experience one here coming up.
Excellent.
So, that will be really fun. So, thank you for joining me. I feel I could talk forever. I hate ending it, but... the one thing we didn't touch on is, can you guys believe everything? Enjoy the Silent Hit, its 30-year mark, and then Policy of Truth, I think today,
yeah. Policy years? Of Truth, yeah, I know. Oh, it's terrifying, the relentless march of time.
Oh man, you know, That was you know, was one thing for me, and I'm curious, you know, Daniel's perspective is his perspective is completely different because he was a part of it. But I remember when I went to see the film in theater or cinema, as you say, when I went to the movies. No, when I went to go see it, I had a moment of where I got a little sad because I've been a fan for not sad, but I've been a fan literally since 1984, and I've had their posters on my wall, and here they are on the big screen, and you know, they're in their mid-50s now. Yeah. And I can still picture, like, I thought they were like older, not older, but you know, 10 years older than me. Like watching 101, they seemed like they were 30 years older than me, but they still look young. You know, and they've always looked young, but they're starting to show their age a little bit, and they look great. I'm just saying, here they are, and then you know, when Christian's putting on the Black Celebration record, and you could see the label spinning. I just had this flush of nostalgia. And I got anybody else have that, or did you have that after watching it?
It's a very nostalgic film. I thought it made me. I was having similar emotions to you watching it, thinking. Just thinking how long I've been a fan, not as long as you, and then seeing them there still doing this and still pulling in these audiences and kind of knowing as well my friends who'd seen some of the gigs of me in that tour. It was like, for them, it was the first time seeing Depeche Mode, and they were fans also. I'd been boring them about Depeche Mode for years, but they finally got it. And, you know, seeing their reactions at the gigs was a special thing, but then seeing the film, I think, made me almost feel like I was seeing Depeche Mode for the first time in a way. It was just... it was really striking and just incredible. It was really quite a moving film, I thought.
Yeah. Yep. Did you feel that after watching it, or did you know, Daniel? Or...
I actually saw the film like 5 times in a row. And on each time, I got very emotional. I cried on 4 out of these 5 times.
Oh, that's so cool.
And it was not because of my part in the movie. It was because of the other ones.
Yeah. You know?
Somehow I could relate to them. And I think that's what's so beautiful about this film is that it's a portrait of fans. And we tried the best as we could to make a portrait of all fans.
Totally. Somehow.
Yeah.
I thought every aspect of fan was represented well. Except for maybe like people like David and I who obsess over stupid catalog numbers. And there were records shown, but you know what was, you know, as I was watching it, and to kind of tie it back to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, when I watched the Cure one, I've been a Cure fan just about as long, and that's probably due to California radio, like alternative radio played these bands, but I just saw People Are People on MTV and just floored by it. So it's not a, I mean, that's just when I got into them. Everyone gets into them different times, but when I was watching the Cure one and they do the little package before of all, you know, like the timeline, I got a little emotional because it didn't really hit me how long I'd been a fan. And then I remember when, you know, the Head on the Door was the new record and here's the singles and going to the store and buying it. I'm like, how am I going to hold it together when they do the Depeche Mode one? Like, you know, I'm a little more obsessed with them. So it probably won't affect me because I've, like, I can look at a picture from 1984 and, you know everything about it. You know, the sleeve of the album and everything. But The Cure was more of like, oh, yeah, like, yeah. But I'm sure that timeline package thing they'll do before showing their... It's just going to be incredible. That's kind of the feeling I had when I watched the film. So I'm really excited that you know, Kasus was a part of it. And
yeah, definitely.
It was just so cool seeing you do that. We made fun of you before, yeah, constantly. But then now we can't. And no, I'm just kidding. But oh, it was just, it was
pretty. I'm glad eager I was... for the next one. I'm eager for the next podcast.
Yes. We'll do that soon. Like I was trying to do these like every couple of weeks, but we could do it tomorrow and I'll just throw it up in a couple of days. There doesn't need to be a timeline, but no, I want to watch the movie and jot down some notes and get a little more insight on your singles tour t-shirt that we were talking about. And, yeah, so let's man, we could talk all day, so let's stop boring anyone who made it this far in. But anything new going on the blog, David? Any new projects? I know we're working on some stuff for Home,
yeah,
the collective. But anything new going on with the blog?
Not a massive amount just now. I'm writing my chapters for Halo at the moment to get them finished off so that Kevin and I can edit all of that.
But and if you're not following along Halo Book on Twitter.
Yeah, follow that. Yeah, Halo Book on Twitter. That's Kevin's Twitter. That'll have all the information, yep. And the blog will have all that as well.
Kevin May is on. You can find him. Kevin, you're all on Twitter.
Yeah, you'll find Kevin. Yeah,
Kasus on Twitter. Sorry, I had to say it again.
Yeah, you don't have to rush it. Kasus.
Kasus. It's just my new favorite word. So.
And with my accent from Rio, it's even Kasus.
Is a German Berlin kind of accent starting to flirt into your, like, does that happen? You know, like when people from here move here and they get kind of an American form of their accent, is that happening? I don't know why I'm curious about that. I just am.
German is weird because apparently no one speaks German. They speak their dialects. And
that sounds like China, you know, there's all the different dialects.
Somehow they managed to understand each other, but exactly because I shushed the words with that, I was told that it sounds like the accent from Munich when I say the days of the week. For example, Tuesday is Dienstag, that's what it says. And then my husband was the first one to laugh and said, "You sound like a Bavarian."
That's completely over my head. Now, I can do that with the differences in the U.S., though, so I can relate. But, yeah, some of the accents in the U.S., you know, when you're talking to somebody from the South or somebody from the Midwest or California.
I can do a little too, you know.
Yeah. You know who's voting for Trump and who's not. No, I'm just kidding. I promise not to get political. Well, cool. Well, I know it's kind of hard to end this. I'm enjoying this way too much, but we'll just do it again. And as more Depeche Mode, you know, it's kind of pointless to talk about Depeche Mode news because everyone's seeing it on their feed like weeks before we talk about it. But sometimes maybe they want to hear our thoughts on it or something. But anytime you guys are up for talking, I might hit you up on... hey guys, let's jump on and record something.
Yeah,
sounds good to me.
So, well, thanks for joining me. I will we will get this online and let people try and decide if they hate us or not. And we'll have a new episode soon and look for that Kasus. Is that a total American accent to say Kasus?
No, that's just a normal way of saying, but I will tell you're not from Rio de Janeiro.
yes. So I know anything. And now it's so funny. Like when you on Facebook, sometimes you'll post from your Facebook page and then your personal page. Yeah. I'm like, which one's which? I'm like, I gotta tell which one's his page. But he does. If you're not friends with Daniel on Facebook, you can find his. He has a Facebook page.
And that's the difference. It's on my name. The page doesn't have the sign, the acute sign on the U. And the profile has. That's the difference.
All right. So now you'll know if he unfriends you. But anyway, I can. I'm sure some crazy. I had some crazy after we all did the takeover.
That's right. Yeah.
A year or two, and after that, I had some pretty crazy fans that I just randomly accepted and harmless, but like you're in California. How far are you from Santa Barbara? I got a couple messages like that. Have you met Martin? I'm like, dude, like I'm friend block. Like
one person asked me, could you tell me the reason that Alan left the band? And I said, well, I'm not in the band, so I can't. And she said, well, can you phone him and find out?
Oh,
I thought, well, if I could phone Alan Wilder, I would have done it before now. But
of all the things well documented, why did you leave the band? Did you know Dave did drugs? What?
Did you know Dave said that if you ain't being bootlegged, you ain't happening?
Yeah, exactly. He doesn't want to sign your bootleg, but he's happening. So I guess that's a good point to end it on. Well, thank you. And I will catch up with everybody here real soon.
Well, thanks, everyone. I hope you enjoyed episode 12 of Breathing in Fumes. I had a blast chatting with Daniel and David, and I hope I can talk them into joining me here on the podcast more often. For more info on Breathing in Fumes, be sure to follow me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. It's at Breathe In Fumes. If you have any questions or want to get in touch with me, just drop me an email. It's Glenn, G-L-E-N, at depeche-mode.com. Thanks, everyone, for all the support, and following the podcast means a lot. If you want to subscribe, you can do so on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Amazon Echo users, you can ask Alexa to play Breathing in Fumes. Take care, and a new episode coming soon. Thanks, everyone.